Welcome to Become Nomad podcast. Whether you're already a nomad or aspiring to become one, we're here to supply you with relevant information to help keep you on the road until you need a change. And sending you my regards from Krakow. Basically, it's my last day here in Krakow, Poland. I'm gonna go tomorrow to Warsaw, only for a few days. I usually avoid capital cities and the biggest cities in each country, but Warsaw sounds really, really cool. And I also have a few meetings lined up there, so should be interesting. After that, I'm probably gonna go to Belarus. Still thinking about it. Belarus is very non-touristic country at the least, and I'm still interested to see what's going on there. Topic for today is kind of connecting with the transition to Belarus and maybe the preparations for it. So the idea over here is how to avoid having problems when crossing borders as a tourist. And let's jump into it. So today's topic is avoid problems when crossing borders. It's not such a fun topic, but it's something that we should probably take into account. Now, crossing border is, let's say in general, not a big deal, especially if you're lucky enough to have a really, really good passport. However, borders are sensitive, and they also are the only touch point that we usually have with the local governments and authorities, and therefore they can create some issues and trouble and surprises. So just for this case, I think it's worthwhile to take it into account and prepare when crossing borders. Now, I would say that usually you shouldn't prepare when you cross a border as a tourist. However, there are some elements that kind of push you into being more vigilant and taking more steps in advance before and while crossing the border. And let me talk a little bit about those situations when, if you're in one of those situations, it might be worthwhile to prepare a little bit. So the first situation is basically if you stayed in a country that you're currently exiting longer than a regular tourist. So here is a situation that you didn't break any law and you had, let's say, usually you get 90 or 30 days, usually it's 90, and you stayed almost the entire time of 90 days. Now, this will bring up some questions from the country you're exiting and the country you're going into. I had this when I stayed 3 months in Bulgaria. And the border control in Greece was very, very suspicious. What is a tourist doing for 3 months in Bulgaria? And that creates a little bit of problems that you should take into account. So just in case you stayed a long time in the place where you're exiting from, it might create some issues, suspicions, and questions. So do know. Now, one more, by the way, I'm outside today as well. I'm by the Wisla River, so that's why we have bird sounds. Charming. And here's another situation where you probably want to prepare in advance as well. If the country you're entering is a little bit strict, so on immigration or border control, a few examples that come into mind are the USA and the UK, both of them kind of strict, especially the USA, on who is going inside the country. You can also think about other countries, for example, Israel, that has security issues and therefore does a very, very vigilant check for most people going in. So just in case you're entering such a country, do know in advance that you might be questioned a little bit more than average and have your information in place. One more situation that you have to increase your level of preparation for if you're applying for this situation is that the country you're entering to is a little bit corrupted. So a corrupted country, and there are sadly a few of those around the planet, and I'm talking about very corrupted, that will also influence probably the integrity of the border control. So a corrupted country usually has a messy border, which includes also a little bit of corruption. Examples like Cambodia and Venezuela come to mind. In those cases, you just need to also prepare a little bit in advance. We're going to talk about how in a second. And one more situation that is increasing the likelihood of problems is that if your country passport isn't most of the best passports in the world. So if you have a US, EU passport, Scandinavian passport, you're Canadian, you're okay, Australian. However, if you have a less advantageous passport, you might run into some issues because the border control will have the suspicion that you might stay there to work, or they might even never heard about your country. So your passport has a lot to do with how smooth the border crossing is. One more situation that might complicate things is if your passport stamps tell a story of someone who is constantly moving between places for a extended period of times in each place, basically if you're a digital nomad, and you have to admit that a passport like this of 2 months here, 2 months here, and 2 months there kind of looks suspicious to some people. Most border control will not dive deep into your passport, but some do. And if they do, you probably want to be prepared again with a good story. And one more situation that kind of complicates border crossings is if you're crossing a border by land in locations that don't have much tourist volume. So the biggest the checkpoint of crossing is, the more easier it is to cross, the smaller it is, and we're going to talk about it later, you might encounter some issues. Okay. So if you're meeting any of the above criteria, it might be wise to, as we said, prepare in advance for the border crossing. Now let's go over a few steps that are all into preparation in advance. So first of all, the additional proof of who you are and what exactly are you doing in the place where you stay. So the idea over here is to bring printed proof of an onward flight. This is one of the most important things there is. It's just to show that you know when exactly you're leaving and where to. Border control is a little bit suspicious if you only have a one-way ticket. In most cases, they will not ask to see your onward journey, but in the cases that they do ask, you definitely want to have one if you don't want to run into issues. Moving on to more additional proof, other than the return ticket or the ticket outside of the country, you also some people also ask for travel insurance. This one happened to me twice already. And the idea over here is that the border control wants to see that you have the mentality and the mindset of a tourist who is worried about insurance and so on. It's just an additional proof that you're in the right spot and are not thinking about working there, or you don't have enough money and you come without insurance. So travel insurance is also usually a good thing to have, although rarely asked for. One more thing you want to be prepared with is the name and the address of your accommodation. Usually in South America, wherever you cross a border, they will ask you that. Again, the idea over here is to check that you're not going there as a homeless person, a hobo, or whatever, but you're actually a real tourist going into, preferably, hotels. That's basically the additional proof. Again, just shows who you are, which is the frame of a tourist. You know exactly where you're going, you know what you want to visit, and you know exactly when you leave. Let's move on to additional documentation. So here are some things that, in addition to the things we mentioned before, some countries will ask at the border. One of them is immunization card. So the card where you have all the record of your vaccines. Usually, for example, it happened to me in Bolivia. You simply cannot cross the border without having it. It's important to have it anyway, because it's basically your personal safety and being prepared for the health hazards of every country. But do know that you need it accessible in some countries, not in Europe, for example, but in countries that might have some health issues. Now, in addition to that, I recommend having an additional ID document with a photo, with an official photo. And the idea over here is very, very simple. Border control, they're all into identifying that you're the person that your passport shows you are. And sometimes it's not that clear. You might have changed an haircut, they might be suspicious and need another document. So always have another document, driving license or ID. I usually have the driving license with a photo. That is very helpful just to show that you're legit. In addition to that, I recommend having some photos in your wallet that are suitable for a visa document or a passport. Some countries have visas on arrival and they ask for a photo. I'll just say in advance that basically I'm using Evernote. In this case, I built a folder, which is my travel folder. And the idea over here is that basically all the things that I mentioned, all the screenshots of the things that I mentioned, my return ticket, my accommodation, maybe some other stuff that are related to any proof of what I'm going to do in the country are in this folder so I can show them on demand. Let's move on to one more item that is relevant for the border crossing topic, which is basically get your story right. Now, this one is complicated, but our story as digital nomads is not so, understandable for border control. They probably never heard of the phenomenon and so on. And also, you have to know in advance that it's very unclear as to the status of are you working, who are you working for, and so on when you're a tourist. So all of this is incredibly complicated. Nobody really has answers on what's going on and how to address it. The idea over here is to get your story right in the sense of if someone asks you, do not overcomplicate it. Try to always say the truth, but in a very, very simple way. If you can focus on the side of traveling and getting to know the country, that's a lot better, and it's basically what you do. That's why you're there. And the idea over here is that you do not want to show in any case that you're going to work in the country, which is something that is totally illegal and you should avoid anyway. So the idea is basically to tell the truth about who you are, what you do, and so on and so on, and not go much into detail about how your own personal project, startups, freelancing goes into this picture to avoid problems. Again, border control will not understand the topic of remote work and digital nomads, and that's why you want to be prepared, and be prepared more than anything with explaining your ties to the country of your citizenship. So it's very, very clear that you're not here to stay for a long time. You have a country, and if you have a few, if you have a proof that about what exactly are you doing in the country, usually I have, for example, a few lectures lined up and so on and so on. I show the proof just to show that I'm a little bit legit in case it is needed. And that's basically it on this one. This is a little bit of a difficult topic. Let's move on to the length of stay. So here it's very important to make sure you're not overstaying. Some countries allow you to stay for 30 days, other for 90. You want to make sure that you didn't cross it even not in one day. It can create big problems. As I mentioned before, even if you didn't overstay, if you stayed just the amount of time you can't stay legally, it might arise some problems or questions. Not problems, but questions as to what did you do in our country for 3 months? Like, for example, in Bulgaria, what can you see for 3 months? So be aware of that. I have to say in advance that I usually do not stay until the last day. Because some surprises might happen, and then it means that if a surprise happened, you can't even stay one day over what you stayed already. So if I have 90 days visa, I usually will only stay 80 or 85, just to be in a situation that if something goes wrong or I have to go back to the country, or let's say I find a really cheap flight in a month and I want to go back to the country, I still have those 5 days that I can spend in. You don't want to be on the last day. Okay, let's move on to the topic of the passport and maintaining your passport. So the idea over here is that you want to have a passport in a good condition. This is important. So keep it in a good shape, and a passport that looks old and neglected kind of brings up questions automatically as to is it a real passport, or why are you such a hobo that you maintain your passport in a bad shape? So the idea over here is that if your passport is run down or it's very close to the expiry date, which by the way, you don't want to travel with a passport that has an expiry date of less than 6 months than the current date. because some countries will not even allow you to do to stay or to go there if this happens. So the idea is that you might even want to change your passport before the expiry date or way before the expiry date in case it is run down, or of course in the case that you have too many stamps and it's already crowded, this can create some issues as well. I'll just say in a general note that you might want to take a screenshot, and that's what I do, of the entry stamp in each country you go into, because stamps are easily deleted. It's like low quality ink usually. So when you go out of the country and in the country, people usually are gonna check the entry stamp. That's a must. That's something that always happens. And just in case that it disappeared while you stayed there for a few months, you wanna have a screenshot of this stamp. So this is something that I recommend doing. And the last thing about the passport is basically that some countries are giving you a paper when you enter the country. Some will not even stamp your passport. They will just give you this paper, for example, Israel. And this is basically your stamp. So it's kind of a paper that you have to keep with you, safe, and not lose it. What I usually do to address this and both the issue of keeping my passport in a good shape is to buy a passport cover, some kind of a pocket where you put your passport in that maintains its exterior, give it another layer of defense, and also allows you to have this pocket where you can put stuff inside, for example, the papers that are required to show when you leave the country. Let's move on to another topic, which is basically the visas. Needless to say, you can't enter a country without a visa, so you have to check in advance before you go to your destination. Some countries allow you to do visa on entrance, and that basically means that you need your photo with you usually, and they're just going to produce the visa for you when you enter the country. Again, very important to check in advance. Because in some countries you can only obtain the visa in your home country. Okay, moving on to money and some procedures while crossing the border. So some border crossings will have some hidden costs, especially in developing countries, that you might be encountering some creative fees. Maybe there is an additional health check, a surprise transportation cost, a small bribe, which will not be officially a bribe, but that's what it is, basically. You have to pay someone to do something. And the idea over here is that you want to research the expected fee and come prepared with this exact sum, or maybe a little bit more, since people in the border do not tend to have change. So that's something that should be taken into account. What I recommend is to always have a currency with you that is known globally. I'm talking about, for example, US dollars or euros. Those are the most common ones. And having those as a backup is always recommended at the border itself and after you cross the border, because you never know if you're going to find an ATM or not. In some places, surprisingly, have none. It's also advisable to have some of the destination country money at hand. So, for example, if you're going to a country, it might be worthwhile, especially if you're arriving very late, to have a little bit of the local money in advance, exchange to your destination country's currency before you go to the country. Again, usually at night, because then if you have to pay a taxi, transportation, and so on, you have a little bit of the local money. Small notes of dollars and US and euros are also gonna usually repair it, but at a little bit of a high cost of conversion and so on. So. Something to take into account. Another topic to talk about the person preparation is basically the research. So especially in developing countries, when you try to cross border independently, check the opening hours, make a quick research in Google about how the border crossing is, are there surprises there, what can you expect, and so on. If you're arriving clueless, you're vulnerable, not only in borders, but in life in general, especially as a digital nomad. So have a little bit of information on your side, especially in countries that are prone to corruption and scams. Moving on for another topic of land crossings, what I would suggest, if you cross by land with a bus or with a train or so on and so on, especially with a small bus or a minivan, you always remember that you need to get the entry and exit stamp. Now, some countries have treaties between them. For example, Paraguay and Brazil. I had a situation that I crossed the border, and the idea over here is that they don't even stop at the border because they have a one-day visit that is allowed without stamping and without showing passports or ID. So I was there happy in Paraguay without an entry stamp, and of course this generates amazingly big problems when you exit because you're illegal in the country. So the idea over here is to make sure that there is a border crossing, that the person in the van or the bus stops in the border crossing and actually to get a stamp so that they know that you're a tourist, especially if you're only traveling with locals. That's the main issue. If you're 100 locals and only you as a tourist, some things might go wrong according to the agreements between those two countries, and you might not even get an entry and exit stamp. Make sure you get those stamps. Those are crucial. I would just advise when you take a minivan or a small bus or whatever, to make friends with the driver. Do a little bit of chit-chat. You can even buy them a candy or give them a little bit of a tip. The idea over here is that you have someone on your side if things go wrong, and it actually was very valuable for me. Moving on to the topic of belongings and your equipment and bags. So first of all, I want to say that I make a habit of going over my bags before crossing a border, because one of the worst things that can happen to you is that something that shouldn't be in the bag is there, especially if someone put it by mistake or not by mistake. So I basically go over all my bags every time I cross a border. I also use sometimes a lock, only in this case, when I cross the border, to close the bag. Again, you don't want to be in a situation that someone puts something in your bag that will get you into trouble. Those things are not common, but they have happened. It goes without saying that if you're an idiot, and I'm sorry, there is no other word, and you're crossing the border with anything illegal, like drugs and so on and so on, you're putting yourself in a world of a mess. Do not do that. It's simply not something that you want to do. But other than that, some innocent things might even get you into trouble as well. Usually it's organic substances like vegetables and so on that might be totally illegal and a crime against the country to go into the country with a banana. For example, I heard someone that went into Chile from Peru with a banana and got almost arrested and detained at the border for hours. Some countries have very strict laws that protect their agriculture and so on from infections and viruses. So be aware of that and try not to enter any organic substances. Now, as for when you cross the border, without saying, it's important to say, especially if it's a border that is known for being a little bit corrupted, that and has a lot of touts there and so on, that you have to keep your belongings safe, keep an eye on them all the time. And as for customs and all the things that you can get into the country or not, you have to check in advance, especially if you bring a lot of cash into a developing country, which is usually not that recommended anyway, because especially in very corrupted countries, you might have it taken away from you. I've seen those things happen sometimes. Again, rare, but happen. But again, you have to be aware of how much cash can you get into a country. What about alcohol and so on? What are their laws about cigarettes and so on if you're using those stuff, electronic gadgets? So check this in advance. And of course, in airports, you never board an airplane in your bag that you carry with you with something that can be perceived as a cold weapon, for example, a pocket knife. You want to send those away in your luggage and get rid of all the other stuff, such as fireworks and gas cans altogether. Do not board them on a plane. That's a really bad idea. Okay. So moving on to one more topic that is a little bit more personal, which is the good attitude thing. So basically, border police are people, like everyone else. So they are working on profiling and trusting their intuition. And if they see a positive person, a smiley person, and a polite person, they probably won't hold you up. However, if they encounter someone that is smug, disrespectful, or nervous, they might delay you. So that's something that you want to change in your attitude, while crossing a border. I would just say that I usually cross borders only on weekends, and that's why I'm a lot more calm, relaxed, and so on, because I have a lot more time. I don't think about work and stuff, and I think it's important. Okay, so let's move on to appearance and prior preparation. So you want to look respectable and dress nice when you cross a border. You don't want to look too fancy, of course, but the idea is that you're not a hobo, you're not a homeless person. You want to maybe shave before you cross a border, put some nice clothes. It just shows that you're a tourist, a regular tourist that is into the country. It's important. With that said, of course, you don't have to be perceived as rich, and don't flaunt your valuables, which will make you a target. So just find the balance there. One more point is to pick a major border crossing. So if you can, the busier the border crossing is, the safer it is, although it might take you a little bit more time to cross. The idea over here is that small border crossings are not really for tourists, and they... you're probably going to have border control that is a little bit more suspicious, and more importantly, border control that is not that connected to the government, which means that they're going to be a little bit more independent and so on and so on, especially in corrupted countries. So just pick a major border crossing. It will be better if possible. One more thing that connects to that is to basically fly in. The idea over here is that if you cross a border flying in an airport, it will be easier. So airports are designed for tourists, and they also show that you have a little bit of money to take a flight, unlike tourists that might go in a bus from one place and another and might not even be tourists. So just know that flying in can make the border control experience a lot easier. I still cross a lot by land, but do know that it has an advantage. Moving on to the next point, which is together is better than alone. So social validation is surprisingly also relevant in borders. Border control officials are basically profiling people, and basically if you're traveling alone, you're by definition being profiled as a potential troublemaker. So the idea is that if you can cross a border with someone, it's better. It provides a little bit of social validation, and that's why couples usually in border crossings have no problem. So the idea is that if you can cross a border with someone, it's better, and if not, maybe you can make an acquaintance while being at the bus and so on and so on, only to show that you're speaking with someone and you're not a lone wolf and so on. So that could be a good thing that might help. And moving on to the last topic, which is cars and children. Why are they connected? I don't know, but I put them together. So basically, crossing a border with a car can be tricky. You want to make sure you have all the documentation ready and valid. There was a giant fish now jumping from the river and making me a little bit wet. So just about the cars, just make sure that you have everything in place as to documentation, and do a little bit of research. And for the children, of course, traveling with a child that is not yours requires their parent, written parent consent, and there are probably some other laws and rules about this, so do check in advance. And that's basically it. I think that if you are preparing for your border crossing, especially if you have to and it's a tricky border crossing, you should always be fine if you spend a little bit of time into research and preparation. And that's basically it. So have a safe border crossing and good traveling. The show notes for this episode are going to be on becomenomad.com if you need to take some notes. Would love to hear your comments if you have any additions and so on and so on. Have a good day. Bye-bye.